is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 203 in the series. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. We're sharing this segment of the town council meeting on February 5, 2020, as the topic, Community Preservation Act, will be the subject of much discussion from now until November 2020. Town Council Chair Tom Mercer opens this segment of the council meeting, asking Town Administrator Jamie Helen to lead the Community Act preservation discussion and overview. It was a sense of deja vu for Jamie as he realized that he had come to Franklin on November 7, 2001 to do the very same thing early in his career. There were a few good stories to share as he recounted from the minutes of that Town Council meeting almost 20 years ago. The presentation, thus set in time perspective, did proceed. A link to the presentation doc used is included in the show notes. After the town council had the opportunity to ask their questions, members of the audience also had their turn to raise questions or comments. Each individual introduced themselves as they came forward to speak. At the end of the discussion, Tom asked Jamie to start working on the details to enable this item to come back before the council and eventually before the community for a vote at the November 2020 election. So without further ado, here is the recording for the meeting segment on the Community Preservation Act, which runs approximately 65 minutes.
Okay, moving on, our next presentation is the Community Preservation Act discussion. It will be led by our town administrator, Mr. Helen.
My name is Jamie Helen. I'm the town administrator. No. While we're waiting, through you, Mr. Chairman, thank you. So while we're waiting for the projector to heat up, I have a, with your indulgence, I have a little short story to present that hopefully gets a little chuckle. I'm glad there's a good crowd here.
So I did get a chuckle.
He's got an audience.
Well, this is pretty funny. So I had some vague memories, or somewhat vivid memories, and moments of Franklin when I got here, and I thought, I think I've been here before. I was kind of coming back. And so tonight's discussion had been brought forth to us by Councilor Pellegrini, Councilor Hamlin. I think over the last year, many of you have asked for this presentation or some of the discussion on the Community Preservation Act. So now that it's come to fruition, I had to go back and look at the record. And so I went back to the town clerk's office, and I dug back to the Franklin Town Council minutes from November 7th, 2001. And that was about the second month, I think, Jeff Nutting was the town administrator, so that was quite some time ago. And the council at that time did have a another discussion on the Community Preservation Act, and if you'll indulge me for a minute. Presentations and discussions. Community Preservation Act. Open Space Committee Chairman Alan Earls introduced Jamie Helen of the Massachusetts Office of Environmental Affairs for a slide presentation regarding the Community Preservation Act. Mr. Celli pointed out that this proposal failed in several affluent communities, but Mr. Renzi noted that Franklin, like other towns, will be facing fiscal limitations in the years ahead, and that this may not be the best time for making this proposal. Helen recommended that the town could begin the education process rather than starting with a bylaw. Mr. Evans noted the distinction between an increase in tax increase and an increase in the tax assessments. When I came to Franklin, I started realizing I kind of knew the space and knew I'd been here once before, and I thought it was pretty funny that 20 years after, here I am being requested to do yet another presentation on the Community Preservation Act. So I had to go back.
And it took you that long to bring it back.
And it was funny, I was sitting there thinking, you know, it was the second month Jeff Nutting was on the job, and maybe if they listened to Helen and Nutting. Just saying. Also in these minutes, I have to also mention a couple of other funny points. That were in here. Stephanie McNeil will start as the Human Resources Director part-time in November, full-time in December. Mr. Sorrell, the town attorney, was also appointed that evening as town attorney. So when you look back into the minutes, sometimes you can unearth a couple of funny notes that I thought were
fairly common. That the vote was actually invalid.
We'd like our rebound.
So, you know, I guess you never know what the future beholds. So I thought that was pretty funny that, you know, 20 years ago, that was my first job out of college was working for the Executive Office of Environmental Affairs. And I was very lucky to be a part of the strategic team at the time with Governor Cellucci and Governor Swift and Secretary Duran to get the Community Preservation Act passed at the state level. And then part of my job for a couple years was to go out and implement it at the local level. Obviously, at that time, I was not successful in Franklin, but you know, who knows, maybe the second time's a charm. So the presentation, I'm gonna go through some slides really quickly. The Community Preservation Coalition, this is actually their presentation that they do. I did do some outreach to them to come out and do this presentation themselves tonight, but they unfortunately do not have the staff to be able to do these. And they just did a webinar last week, so this is fairly updated. So I'm gonna go through this a little quickly to give an overview for especially the folks here and the folks that are at home, so they understand this, go through some numbers that we've put into the packet, and then leave it open to you, Mr. Chairman, and the council to have a discussion, and if folks in the audience want to participate, they can chime in as well. So the basics of the CPA are pretty straightforward. This enables communities to have a dedicated revenue source, local restricted funds for historic preservation, open space and recreation, and community housing. Here's the latest tally. As of last week, a total of 176 communities across the state have approved the CPA, which represents about two-thirds of the population. As you can see from this map, the majority of the communities around Franklin, certainly not everybody, but many of them have already adopted CPA, and we'll get into a little bit more of the discussion a little bit later on this issue. The basics of the CPA are, it is a 3% local surcharge on your property bill. I'm going to go through them. I've actually calculated out a formula at the end of this presentation to exactly show what this would mean for the Franklin residents here and how exactly the formula works. It is not a Prop 2.5 override. It is not 3% in that same vein. It works very differently, and we'll explain that in a little bit. There are some exemptions under the Community Preservation Act. The first 100,000 of residential property. So if your house is worth, say, $400,000, the surcharge would only apply to $300,000. The same for commercial and industrial properties. And there is an exemption, some federal criteria of low income and low and moderate income seniors can also qualify for the exemption. That's a decision that the body would make before you put it on the ballot. And the vast majority of communities around Massachusetts have adopted that exemption for obvious reasons. How to adopt, really the process is fairly simple. There are two choices. 5% of registered voters is very, very difficult to do. It will really take a vote of the town council to be able to put it on a ballot. The second step would be to put it on the ballot at a regular state election, or in the case of a presidential, we'll get into it later. It's 35 days before a local election we have to put it on the ballot, or 60 days before a presidential. So if the council for some reason was to put it on this year, you'd have to do it a couple months before. Just went through that, 60 days before the presidential. So how does the CPA work? Here's one of the features of it, is that it does require a bylaw and ordinance, and it's required representation from those five committees. There's one member appointed on an annual basis from each of those committees: the Conservation Commission, Historical Commission, Planning Board, Rec Board, and the Housing Authority. And then you also have the local option in your bylaw, which we would have to go through the local process here at the council level to add four at-large members, or you could actually take another member from, say, the Municipal Affordable Housing Trust or other committees that the community so chooses, but there can be no more than 9 members on that committee. And the role of the Community Preservation Committee is to basically look at the CPA needs. They do and review and accept projects. And in the case of our form of government, they recommend, they do not approve, but they recommend expenditures from the CPA fund to the full town council for your approval. I should note that our town attorney, like in my memo, has actually been the chair of the Community Preservation Committee in the town of Medway, where he lives, for well over a decade. And so Mr. Sorrell, I'm sure, is happy to answer any questions folks may have on some of the mechanics of these, and certainly his successful experience in Medway running the Community Preservation program there.
Just a quick on that slide.
Yep.
I don't know if it's coming later, but while the legislative body passes any, the the CPN, the CPC is actually a gatekeeper, so you need a positive recommendation from the CPC in order for the council to even take a project up.
I asked and I received. So this is the next set of slides. I'm going to kind of go through them fairly quick. CPA funds at work, the most common question I think that a lot of people always ask is, well, what can you spend the money on? The broad categories I outlined earlier, but here's some examples. The restoration of historic municipal buildings, the adaptive reuse of historical buildings, grants to nonprofit community groups with preservation easements. That's a whole other aspect of the CPA, but those preservation easements are a requirement. The preservation of historic municipal documents for the community. I've seen many successful projects throughout the state on these types of things, especially with communities that have documents that are well over 100, 200 years old. Preserving agricultural land, protecting vulnerable open space, protecting drinking water supplies, playgrounds and recreational facilities, athletic fields, hiking and biking trails, parks, community gardens, as brought forth by the Franklin High School students earlier. So there you go, Trevor. Whoop. And then one of the more complicated but important aspects of the CPA is affordable housing. There's some income criteria, but we're fortunate to have a very active housing authority in the town, which Lisa Audette, the executive director, runs. And next week, Lisa and the housing authority is going to be coming to give another presentation before the council to talk about the housing authority. But there's the ability here to use funds to assist in projects that the housing authority maybe have going on, as well as the Municipal Affordable Housing Trust in the town of Franklin, in addition to affordable housing studies and a variety of other projects. It is noted on the slide, these are very different from Chapter 40B. This is not a Chapter 40B program. That is completely separate. But you can work on proactive affordable housing projects. Housing for veterans is another common use from Community Preservation Act money. And adaptive reuse of existing buildings. Meeting specialized community needs. And community involvement with nonprofit partnerships like Habitat for Humanity and some of the organizations that I met before. It also has LEED certification for sustainable development, again, getting the net zero concept brought to us a little bit earlier during citizen comments from the Franklin High School students. And so here's, so those are the main uses that you can use in a quick summary, and obviously the town attorney and I can do the best we can to answer any questions that folks have. So, tried to do the best I can to boil down the money part of the CPA as easy as possible. I hope folks could somewhat read my chart. So if you look up, this was also in the packet. If you look up in the top blue area, we did break out total tax of residential property. This is a scenario that's, that we're putting out there to try to show how this all works. If you look over in the right, I'm gonna do a little pointer here. You'll notice 3%, 2%, 1%. In the CPA, you can't do any more than 3% surcharge. You can do 1.25, 1.5, 1.75, 2. Most communities do the 2% or 3% number. But over here in each column, you can see under those scenarios, in the bold-faced numbers, based on both the local contribution as well as the 24% state match, in those bold numbers, you can see that if the town were to adopt the 3% surcharge, and with the current state match formula that has just been put into place, and these numbers were released just last week, it looks like most communities around the state are averaging about a 24% match to the local contribution. So under the scenario of 3%, you're looking at about 1.9 million, 1.88 million, with about 450,000 given to you back to the state from the state, which would result in about 2.33 million a year in revenue annually that would go towards the Community Preservation Act Trust Fund that's set up locally here for investments in Franklin. At a 2% number, when you work out the numbers, you're looking at about 1.56 million. And if you did a 1%, you were looking at just under 700,000 total to bring into the coffers. It's important to note that every year with the amount of money that you bring in locally via both the state match as well as the contribution through the surcharge, 10% of those monies must be set aside for open space, 10% must be set aside for historical preservation, and 10% must be set aside for affordable housing. You do not need to spend that money every year. You could say, okay, 10% of 1.6 million is 160,000. You're not gonna spend any historical preservation projects this year. And you can kind of bank that money, if you will, over 2 or 3 years, which gives you then, you know, say $500,000 to do a project if you wanted to save up those monies. The remaining 70% is completely discretionary on any of those items. And so it does give a lot of flexibility for the local community to be able to address exactly what those local needs are. And then finally, I'll kind of end on this note, the what does it mean for me? So I took the average median home value based off the most recent tax approval in December that the council had at a tax rate hearing. So the average median home value in Franklin is $460,400. We assumed, like the vast majority of communities in Massachusetts do the exemption of the first $100,000 of that property value. So then the total Community Preservation Act money applied is $360,400. And unlike your regular property taxes, this works very differently, where you apply the tax rate, and then your new property tax bill is, under that scenario, is $5,229. And then I did models out for 3%, 2%, and 1%. And really what you would be looking at for the average Franklin family under a 3% surcharge would be contributing $156 a year into the Community Preservation Act fund that would go up into that $2.39 million. If you did 2%, the average homeowner in Franklin would be paying $104.58, and the 1%, the average homeowner in Franklin would be paying $52.29 into the trust fund. Obviously, you know, this relates directly to your own personal property. This is just a model to try to generate an idea of what exactly it would mean for the average Franklin resident. As you can see, this works very differently than your average property tax bill and the way it works. And this is one, from my experience, this is probably one of the most confusing elements of it. But as you can see, the numbers are right there for folks to kind of gauge where they may stand. A couple of other quick notes I should point out that were in my memo, and then I'm certainly happy, you know, we'll certainly have a discussion and take questions. As I put in the memo, that the town of Franklin did vote on this once, and it was in 2007. It was roughly, it was about 3,800 votes in town, and 2,000 of those had voted no, and about 40% in the town had voted yes. But that was over 13 years ago. I think the demographics in the town have certainly changed quite a bit since then. And I would note one last point, which is how CPA is funded is through a series of real estate transaction deeds. And every year, the Registrar of Deeds sends me a letter in the mail, as well as our assessor and our finance director, telling us how much money your community contributed to the CPA matching trust fund that the state doles out its money. And in the past calendar year, in 2019, the town of Franklin, meaning the people here that paid those real estate transaction fees, paid $126,230 into that fund. So CPA has been in effect since 2000. 2001 was when the first community was adopted. I believe it was the town of Harvard, if I remember correctly, and the town of Acton as well. So on average, the town of Franklin's probably been putting about $100,000 to $125,000 of local transaction fees of citizen money here into the trust funds. And if you go back and look at the map, you're basically paying your neighbors all that money, where that money is being paid from your citizens to other communities to augment their projects in other communities. And I think the Registrar of Deeds sends this out to every community in Norfolk County. It's a good service. It does remind us, and in Norfolk County, if you look at this list, certainly Franklin is one of the larger communities, so you expect that total to be high. But when you look at Brookline contributing $162,000 and we're contributing $126,000, that's not much of a difference for a town like Brookline versus us. So I think relatively speaking, the town of Franklin does contribute a fair amount of money. And if you add that $100,000 up over, you know, 15, 20 years, that's a substantial, you're talking millions of dollars that have been poured into other communities, into those projects, And so this is always at least one point that, you know, is certainly worth noting, because I think, you know, it's an important point to point out that a lot of money from the town of Franklin certainly goes to other communities. So I did my best, Mr. Chairman, to try to synthesize this conversation and at least get the information out as best we can. And certainly happy to answer any questions. And I know the town attorney can answer any questions as well. And I know a lot of folks are here to talk about it. So happy to answer.
Thank you, James. Okay. And welcome back. Okay, questions?
James, thank you for bringing this forward. This is something that I know I pushed back in 2007. We wanted this. We saw that we had so many transactions at the Registry of Deeds that we had hundreds of thousands of dollars. If everybody can remember, in 1989, we were the fastest growing community in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. All that money went back, and we were giving it to other communities, which made no sense. Well, we tried our darndest, that's for sure, back then, to pass this with the residents of Franklin. But I don't think we did a good job doing that. I think tonight your presentation was far superior to anything that we said back then, really. And I'm hoping that the people that are listening to this will see that it isn't a lot of money for them to have taken out of their taxes, but they have to see what the money is that our community has brought in and has lost. And like you said, from when did this begin? What year?
So the act was passed in September of 2000, and the first communities adopted it in 2001.
So stop and think about all of the money since 20 years.
Almost 20 years.
Of what we, it's millions. Yep. Millions of dollars that we've lost, that we could be using for open space, that we can be using for historical buildings, we can be using it for so many restoration projects and that, rather than having to take it out of the people's pockets, mm-hmm. you know? And this way, doing it just as a little bit at a time. Mm-hmm. I am 100% in favor of this, and I only hope that the residents of Franklin will. And what I have to say is, we've got to work hard. All of the committees that are here tonight, you've got to get out there. We've got to set up some coffees, you know, teas, whatever we want to do, and just explain this for people. And I know, Steve, if we can do a show with you to get it out there to people so that they understand it's so little to give back out of their taxes, but they're going to get so much back for the community. So that's it for right now.
Thank you, Councilor Pellegrini. Councilor Hamblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, through the chair. I have a couple questions about the match. So the match percentage seems to change throughout the years. It was a lot higher before. It had been lower, I think, and that's maybe why it didn't pass earlier. But now it's back up to 24%, 25%. Is there like, does it change every year? Is it dependent on how much money comes in to the fund? And, I'll let you answer that one, but I have to go.
Yeah. So through you, Mr. Chairman, it has ebbed and flowed. So I think, folks, to Councilor Pellegrini's point, if you were an early adopter of the CPA, it was no secret back then, and I would say 2001 to maybe 2010, 11, when the city of Boston got in, that changed quite a bit. But for that first 10 to 12 years, cities and towns were seeing virtually a dollar for dollar match. So for every dollar you were raising local, you know, you were getting a dollar match from the state, right? And so at that time, a lot of the big bulk of the communities that did adopt it certainly got in, because that was a pretty good deal. You know, you raise $2 million and you get $2 million back. I don't know any business in America that wouldn't take that deal. That's a pretty good ROI. And so you know, it has gone down over the years, and part of the reason was the changes in the real estate market in terms of how the fees were collected, and that there were just more and more communities that were getting the match. And so to your point, Councilor Hammond, it is correct that the match did start to slide slowly over many years to 78%, 72%, 65%. It was at a low 2 years ago at about 11%, which was an all-time low. And I think last year in the budget, the legislature as well as the governor, after many years of lobbying, did adjust the fees and put some additional revenue from the state back into the, I think it's called the Community Preservation matching trust fund, whatever the technical term was, but whatever the fund is that's deposited with all the revenues where the state doles it out. The memo I got from the registrar or from DOR, as the governor put out his budget a week and a half ago, did include this new number, which is the most frequent number, the mode, if you will, is about 24%. There's some communities when you look at it are a little lower and some are a little higher because of some interesting dynamics, particularly like the Cape, which used to have a big land bank, and then they kind of made a deal to get them all in at once. Same thing with the Vineyard because of the local geography. But by and large, 24% seems to be what the town is, what the communities are getting for this fiscal year. Moving down the road, that number could ebb and flow. It could go lower. It could go higher. I think the general argument from the Community Preservation Coalition, which is a group formed by a lot of the environmental, historic preservation, and affordable housing nonprofits, statewide nonprofits, Mass Audubon, Trustees of Reservations, CHAPA, those organizations, are kind of a lobbying group. And you know, I think the more communities that are in, I think gives you a bigger base, you know, certainly on Beacon Hill, to try to make sure that that match stays up. And I think I know there was a lot of frustration with the 11%, but you know, at a quarter, at 24%, you look at 2% at 300,000. You know, I can just speak for just quickly for the recreation department. I mean, you know, we're going to go through this in a little while, right? We're authorizing hopefully $200,000 a year for a park renovation in town for Ryan or the schools. We have another $100,000 for some netting that's going in up at the high school. Well, there's $300,000 right there. So even from the state match, if you say if that those types of projects are worth it for the local to have your contribution go in and get that as your return on investment, that frees up $300,000 more of capital money for the schools or the police or the fire for other gear. So I think it's all how you kind of play it. I think if you look at it as, well, it's not the old days, we don't get the dollar for dollar match, it's never going to get there again. That's just the cold facts. And I think over time, you've probably lost even tens of millions in that category. So, but that's how the match works. And I believe the town attorney wants to chime in with a few additional points.
So as this went downhill, as Jamie has explained, the coalition and other groups started to aggressively lobby the legislature. And they were had met with some interim success whereby they were looking for a long-term fix, but instead they got a few years with single lump sum payments in, which caused the up and down. This last year would have been the lowest, but for the fact that there was huge surplus in the budget and the legislature actually put another $20 million into the fund in addition to what was being collected at the registry. And more importantly, passed what is supposedly a long-term fix by significantly increasing the fees being collected at the registry going forward. Those are going to take a year to kick in, which is why they bridged it with the additional amount. The other thing, just quickly to be aware of, a couple of quick points. One is, if you do buy in at the 3%, the statute provides for initially 100% match, but if they cannot make 100% match, then you go through rounds. And there's a distribution, an initial distribution, which is probably the 24% or the lower figure that Jamie's been referring to. But if you're at 3%, you're then eligible for two additional distribution rounds, and it significantly increases the amount that you get. Medway just got close to a third, 33%. Ultimate distribution, and that Medway's at 3%. It was so the total distribution for this last year was close to $300,000. The other thing, just in passing, is you can also borrow against future revenue CPA. So if you had a major project, major acquisition, you can leverage it. And the town of Sturbridge did what I consider the paradigm win-win. Because Sturbridge Village, old Sturbridge Village, was in financial straits with the downturn and the 9/11 and a bunch of other factors, and they had a lot of open land surrounding old Sturbridge Village, which was potentially developable, and they were going to sell it off to raise capital funds for the village. But Sturbridge had the Community Preservation Act, they borrowed against it, and they acquired all that land. So old Sturbridge Village got a huge injection of capital, and the town of Sturbridge got permanent preservation of all this open space.
Thank you.
I have one more.
Councilor Hamblin, you did have one more.
It says that in the presentation that you sent us that you have 5 years to revoke it, and no community has ever done that, to revoke the act. But I was wondering if, like, how many communities have had it for over 5 years? So, like, right? If you knew that, you know, so.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I don't have that number right off the top of my head. I would say this from watching it, you know, for virtually my entire professional career. It's no question the vast majority of those communities on that map did it in the first decade. And then you started seeing the big criticism originally was no cities are doing it. And the city of Boston originally tried once, and Mayor Menino wasn't a supporter of it. And they just went back recently and did it maybe 4 or 5 years ago at a 1%, I believe, but their main objective was affordable housing for many reasons, obviously. And so in Springfield and Boston and in Peabody and some of those larger cities, that's when you started seeing the match going down quite significantly, because they were in Cambridge, they were raising so much revenue. But I think the vast majority of those communities, I would say more than half of them, were certainly in the first decade.
Thank you. Thank you.
All set. Councilor Chandler.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. I think, as Councilor Pellegrini said, when we try and get people to understand this, I mean, it's almost something for everybody. You got the historical preservation, the open space, the outdoor rec, I mean, the veterans housing, the affordable housing. I mean, almost anyone that has to pay the $150, it's something you're interested in. Or even the gardens back there.
Yeah.
Anything like that?
No.
Sorry to keep bringing it.
He couldn't have come on a better night.
I know. But there is something for everybody. And I think people need to just realize that. And not only that, but the other number, the 126, 230, that's just going out the window.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to reiterate that.
Thank you, Councilor Chandler. Councilor Earls.
Go ahead.
Thank you, to the Chair. Yes. So I had the opportunity to attend a function or a meeting in Northbridge about 3-4 years ago. And this was just, to piggyback on what Councilor Chandler was saying, it was just, I just couldn't believe what a great opportunity this would be for a town and all the varied projects that this could address. So I guess my question would be to the town administrator, Is this a moving target that is it an opportunity we could lose or that we should take advantage of or and not lose the opportunity to get these funds for the town of Franklin? Or is this, because even 4 or 5 years ago, I thought this was it was a great program. So I don't, but at the time, the funds dwindled, obviously. I came back, I reported it back to the council. I talked to town planner Brian Taberner, and we couldn't do anything about it at the time. There was nothing that could be done. So I guess my question to you is this an opportunity we could lose if we don't act?
Sure. Through you, Mr. Chairman. So, I mean, it's hard for me to completely opine on that. I mean, this is obviously a community decision. I think Councilor Chandler just you know, in all the comments, and I hit it, but I think when you look at the list of priorities, I mean, I'd be stunned to believe if anybody, that none of you hear about these issues in the community. We talk about the Riverbrook Schoolhouse, the Old South Church on Washington Street. We talk about affordable housing. Next week, we're going to have a very, very in-depth conversation on affordable housing. I know the EDC is going to start that conversation soon. You know, I think to your point, Council of Society, I think partly why many of you have raised this issue and wanted this presentation and starting this conversation now is because you're probably hearing about a lot of these concerns throughout the community. I know that if you hear anything I hear, open space is a big concern. We know that trails and bike trails. And so, you know, I think this gives what the legislature did last year to fix this after many, many years of lobbying for this, for these revised fees and this infusion of money. I think that's one of the reasons why the Community Preservation Coalition staff are stretched thin and can't come out is because they're getting a lot of these requests because I think there is a renewed optimism that maybe this is another opportunity to take a look at it, where maybe 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, you know, maybe it was something that, you know, maybe after the recession or maybe because the matching funds weren't as aplenty, maybe it kind of hit a plateau that the amount of communities that we're in, we're going to be in, and that was that. And I think that due to the you know, positive economy as well as the strong lobbying from all those organizations, you know, I think there's some sort of renewed optimism that, you know, many communities that are not adopted are taking a second look at it.
Thank you. Councilor Ellis.
Chair, I'm sort of a double barrel question. We've had a little bit of this touched on in your response a moment ago, but are there any, is there any sense of sort of the long-term trends where this may be going? And could you just elaborate also a little bit more on some of the discretion sort of options that we have before us?
Sure. You know, it's kind of hard to I just did touch on that with Councilor Sunday. I mean, I think I have no idea where the long-term trend is going to be. I think you see 176 communities. Let's go back to the map really quick. Just to kind of get it, because we're map people in government. We like maps. So if you look at this map, you know, if you see a lot of the white area, you know, west of 495, I mean, those are fairly small communities. And most of those communities are already heavily open space. And those are communities, particularly in Franklin County, around in the Quabbin area, out in Berkshire County, in the Happy Valley. I mean, a lot of those communities are probably never going to adopt this because most of their community is already 60% state forest, or they have just enough money to preserve the one historical building in that community, you know, like our, you know, historical museum or something like that. I really don't think a lot more of those communities are going to take advantage of that. They just don't have the means, and they already have kind of community preservation. I think where you look along the 495 corridor, you know, south of us, and east of us a little bit, there are some opportunities where those communities may be considering this stuff. You know, it's hard to know how many, but if you really look at that map, there's not a lot of other area for that much more growth in that trend. And I think that with the infusion of money and the changed fees, you know, I'm hoping that the legislature sees this as something that's a priority to maintain where we don't get back to that level of the 11%. So in terms of a trend, you know, I don't really know. We're not on that map because this map was done over a month ago when I commuted. You know, I think if they were to update that today, you know, they may put on there, you know, Franklin in yellow because the conversation is going. But I think you see there in yellow some of the additional communities that the coalition has seen maybe that's considering this, you know, and I, most notably on there, ironically, is Brookline. and I can surely tell you they're going to generate a pretty fair amount of revenue. Stunned that they haven't even done it already. But you know, I don't know where that trend will go. In terms of the projects, I mean, I think it's up to your own imagination. I think, you know, parks, playgrounds, I mean, you know, we're asking for some funding this year for the Nason Street Tot Lot, you know, from the legislature. You know, I think there's no shortage of needs. When we go through the capital program soon, you know, there was double the amount of requests that we can fund. Obviously, most of that is vehicles. In an open space, I don't think I have to tell any, you know, secrets out of tail. There's not a lot of land left that would be high, that the open space plan that was approved by the community in 2016, you know, you're talking about a handful of parcels left. So, you know, in terms of what this could be used for, the town attorney made an incredible point, which I did not put in the presentation, which is that you can borrow against the CPA. And I think that that technique is something that when you look at our open space stabilization fund, where we doubled that fund last October, it's at $2 million. You know, that's one piece of land, and that's like probably one third to one, you know, maybe less, maybe one quarter of a down payment on a piece of open space in this town. That's just gonna wipe it out and you're gonna have nothing else there. But for us to go borrow that money on the operating budget has a pretty significant impact on our debt service line item where we traditionally have facilities and buildings. So I think to the town attorney's point, the Sturbridge example is excellent, where they saw a critical need. They only had 120 days to act, but because they had the act, they had the ability to borrow against that for the next decade and be able to do those annual payments of say $200,000 a year. It's basically like its own mini operating budget.
Right.
That's probably one of the most sellable tools you know, that CPA has is being able to be in a position where you can react quickly if something was desperate. So, you know, I think our own imaginations could go wild about what, I mean, you guys have brought up many projects that you know, we could certainly fund through this, so.
And sort of as a brief follow-on, if I might.
Sure.
In terms of how is all this sort of administered? Is it sort of a pecking order thing where everyone has an equal proportion of it, say, historical commission, planning board, you know, so forth, different commissions that have a bite of the apple for this? Do they each draw an equal proportion and then decide how they take it up from there after it's sort of allocated from there, or is it governed by the town council, or how does that process work?
That's a great question. So the Community Preservation Committee, to the town attorney's point earlier, is kind of your first step. And the planning board doesn't really get any percentage of the money. It's just the planning board, out of those five members, annually, they appoint someone to the committee. So the historical commission will do the same thing, the conservation commission will do the same thing, et cetera. And so that's your vetting, you know, it's kind of your vetting entity to look at what's out there and what the percentages are. Like I said before, the act requires you on an annual basis to set aside 10% of the local monies to those three areas, and the remaining 70% is discretionary. I think as if you went into an in-depth presentation with the coalition, you would see, and they have a great website, by the way, with a database of every project across the state that has been done, and I think it's a pretty wide array. I think the town attorney also wants to maybe chime in with a few points. Mark?
Yeah, the Community Preservation Committee is the operative body. It's adopted pursuant to a bylaw. It's got variations on its makeup. But as I indicated earlier, it's charged under the statute with certain investigations, studies, etc., and determining the need. And then it makes the recommendation to the legislative body. And again, you're restricted to either approving or denying whatever is being recommended by the CPC.
Councilor Earls?
That's it. Thank you.
Councilor Kelly?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not too many questions, just a couple of points out of facts. When we're looking at the CPA surcharges, I think it's important to note that Franklin, of all the communities that are listed here in Norfolk County, ranks number 5. As the largest giver, so the fifth most contribution in all of Norfolk County. You know, we don't take advantage of any of that, so that's a huge number. The other one was that the vote last time lost by, or was defailed by 646 votes, which if you look at the way our makeup of the town is, there's a good chance of it being worth putting them back on the ballot for discussion and moving forward from there, and I think it's a good chance of it passing. And also that it does have a low-income, low-moderate income seniors exemption, which is fantastic for those who are struggling and most likely are seniors. And a little disappointed doesn't have a veterans exemption, so I would like to see something like that in there, but there's nothing we can do about that, right? We'll have to lobby for that at some point. But you know, you had mentioned the open space and how we've really worked really hard. I believe over the last few councils, we pushed. At one point, I heard that we pushed more land into open space and did more with open space than any other council prior to us, which was a great accomplishment of the past councils. And really, this is our next step towards preservation. With suburban sprawl, if you look at the map, you saw the map up there. The cities and towns that are on that map have already pretty much been hit by suburban sprawl. And if anybody has watched real estate over the last 5 years, it started us kind of fill in infill down this way. So you can see why towns in our areas are starting to take it. And start to really push on that. So I think between the preservation and everything that's going on, that's fantastic. The only other thing I will note, okay, on your packet is this, you know, vote in here of the last time we did this.
Yeah.
And just want to note that I came on number one on the school committee there with most votes. So it was nice to see my name. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Councilor Kelly. Mark?
Yeah, some years ago, the statute was more restrictive, particularly in terms of its use for recreation. It prohibited your use for existing property. You had to acquire it. And there was a lot of pushback from that, particularly with artificial turf fields. And there was actually a court case that held that you could, and I think it was Brookline or Newton, you couldn't hold, you could not spend it on that. So the legislature amended the statute to broaden the use for recreational uses, and while ironically they specifically prohibited acquiring artificial turf with CPC fund or CPA funds, that has been construed as just the turf itself. So all the prep work, even on a replacement, can be expended from CPA funds. You just can't buy the turf itself.
Thank you. Councilor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, through you to the town administrator. First of all, I definitely support this. Anything we can do to raise for the funds to support the historic preservation and open space, totally up for. First off, the 10% funds allocated for open space, historic preservation, affordable housing, those are minimum sets. So we could, for all intents and purposes, with wording for a vote to the town in the fall, say, I have hypothetically request that a minimum of 20% go to historic, 20% go to open land, 20% go to affordable housing, the additional 40% discretionary. As part of the discretionary, can that be used for roads?
No,
I didn't think so. I just thought I'd ask the question. And the other part, other question I have is for, like, say hypothetically, we had a historical preservation project that we wanted to project, say 5 or 10 years from now. Can these funds remain in the fund for long-term goals of preservation?
Yes.
So if we had either, for instance, a large swath of land, or we had the fixing up of the historic museum, or other types of preservation projects that are extended periods of time, we can bank that.
Yes.
5, 10. What's the period that we can bank?
I think there is a limit, right, Mark?
It's unlimited. So it's just the reverse. Either you can borrow, as I indicated, in anticipation, or you can build it up in the accounts. And the accounts are just an accounting thing through the treasurer or accountant's town accountant's office. So whatever they're investing in, if it makes sense, and you can accumulate it that way, you certainly can do it that way.
Okay, because I personally think, I think the 10% is low. I think. Just looking at 70% discretionary, I think some of that can be automatically chipped off and put an automatic 20% into, say, the specific areas, just so that we're clear to the citizens that our ultimate goal is for preservation and not discretionary spending.
So Mark just first, Mark and Chris.
Through the chair, to that point, because I've been there, and there's been, of the 70% and then the 10-10-10, on the various projects we've worked on in Medway, there's been broad consensus on particular ones. So determining what's what, we might exhaust one particular reserve budget and then take the rest out of the unallocated, but it's not that critical really. You're just concerned, we have several projects that are debt service now, so we need to be aware of that in terms of your revenue stream going forward. But beyond that, it's really not critical, but you lose your flexibility if you start putting into one of those three funds from a reserve standpoint. It's just easy to keep, just do that in the minimum because it complies with the statute, and keep the 70% building up if you want to in the unreserved.
Thank you. Chris.
Hi, Chris Andini, Finance Director.
Just step forward, please.
I'd just like to point out it's a minimum of 10%, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you as a legislative body have to take that vote every year to place that certain amount. You're perfectly welcome to, at that time, debate whether you want to increase the amount that goes into those funds.
Correct.
That's right. Okay.
So it's a policy issue. Council can take that policy.
You can take the vote every year.
Okay. The reason I say that in regards to what the attorney was talking about is the town of Sturbridge Village. They had spent a large sum of their money towards the purchasing of that land. How did that affect any other potential projects that they may have had aside, for instance, buying additional recreational space or historical preservation? Because they put a large swath of money towards the purchasing of the land. Now, you said that was against the money, or that was from the...
I believe they borrowed against future revenues.
Okay.
But there's limitations on that in the statute. You can't shoot the whole wad.
I think what I'm trying to get to is that if we adopt this, and I'm all for it, is that we just make it clear in policy that we want to set a little less discretionary, a little bit more higher percentages towards these, just to make sure that we don't accidentally tap into things that we want to do somewhere down the line.
I have no doubt that there's no shortage of ideas and policy objectives. But Chris kind of nailed it. It's a policy objective.
It's a policy decision that the council would make if
on an annual basis. Similar to the hotel motel tax or some of the other revenues where you do an annual appropriation, you've got to do it. To Mr. Sandini's point, each year you have to look at the pot of money, set aside the, and appropriate the money into the different categories. And if you want to make that policy objective, that's certainly the discretion of the council.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this subject? Please come forward. Just identify yourself, name and address.
Good evening. My name is Lisa Audette. I'm the Executive Director of the Franklin Housing Authority. I just wanted to make one small point regarding the CPC funds. We recently got a NOFA from the state, which is a notice of funding available, that we would be able to get additional funding through the state if we could get leverage funding from another resource outside of the Housing Authority. This NOFA came to us a year and a half ago, and we were able to leverage funds through another resource other than the Housing Authority, and thankfully the Affordable Housing Trust in Franklin was able to help us out, along with Rise Engineering that put some air source heat pumps in our 96 of our units. But by leveraging this money, we were able to actually get enough money from the state. The leverage funds came to about $1.7 million. The rest is, the leverage funds came to $400,000, but through that, we're able to get over $1 million, and then with sustainability funds through the state and compliance reserve funds through the state, we are renovating 40 units of senior disabled public housing to the tune of $2.5 million. So when I look at $126,000 that went out of the window of Franklin, the Housing Authority could have actually done a $650,000 project with that. So it brings tears to my eyes when I see that kind of money disappearing, but I just wanted to bring that point forward.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak? Please come forward, identify yourself, name and address, please.
Jim Schultz, McIntosh Street here in Franklin. I have a couple questions just about the historical building aspects for this. What restrictions are there on what is the criteria for eligibility for buildings to be eligible to participate in this?
There's great flexibility because it's National Register or as determined by the local historic commission, historic resources. So, and we've had great success in Medway with a couple of smaller projects where we said, go to the historic commission. If they determine this is a historic resource, we'll fund you. One of which was a small veterans square down in Medway Center where the late Colonel Mike Batwani felt very strongly that all the flags should be replaced, the flag poles, etc. Went to the Historic Commission, they said, yep, that's a historic resource, all the veterans and from the various wars are listed there. Came back and we said, fine, we recommended the funding, and town meeting approved it. So.
Okay, quick follow-up to that.
Sure.
If you have a building that has been identified for historical preservation, are there restrictions on use of that building once the project is completed?
Not the use, but there may well be on how you reconstruct the building. For instance, if it's on the National Register, then there's a set of regs from the Federal Housing Administration, the Secretary of Housing, there's criteria that have to be complied with in terms of how you rehab the place. So for instance,
you might not be able to put asphalt shingles on the roof because historically it's incompatible, or you might have to stick with wood clapboards, that sort of thing.
But in terms of use, is there any restrictions on this, say, if the town has a parcel of property in a building that they're using that needs to be upgraded for code, that it can, that we can tap into these funds to upgrade the code, but then potentially change the use of the building to turn it into a revenue source?
No. What the simple, short answer is no. The more complicated answer is you have to determine that it's a historic building in the first place, and then it's not necessarily, and I was going to mention this anyway, this isn't necessarily an all or nothing proposition. You could have a project, several kinds of projects. One that has elements that are not eligible for CPC funding, but others that do. For instance, Needham took their historic town hall, which needed to be rehabbed and also needed to be expanded. So they appropriated separate money for the expansion and used CPC money for the rehab of the historic. The other thing is, you can have a project that is more than one CPC purpose. It's overlapping and potentially have 100% of the funds available for the project.
I think what Mr. Schultz is getting to is, and correct me if I'm wrong, he's looking to see if in fact we use this money to update a historic building, could we then change the use of it or sell it or rent it? Or
correct.
So we have to have a historic preservation restriction on it if you got rid of it, if you dispose of it.
But if we maintain it as the town, where are we able to use that then for potential rental, for whatever purpose, to turn it into a revenue source?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim.
That's what Medway, I'm to the chair, that's what Medway successfully did with the Thea Homestead property. We put a sympathetic addition on, and it's getting constant use in it as a revenue source.
Great. Please come forward, just name and address, please.
Ed Szymanski, 529 Pleasant Street. I have a question and a comment. So first question, I understand that the way this would be adopted by the town is that would go on a ballot in a general election and get voted. So how would that happen? What would be the process to get it from here to the ballot?
It's up to the council to vote to put it on the ballot. Okay. As a ballot question. All right. So it was it would be a process that we would start in the not too distant future, if in fact that's what the council chose to do. And as was alluded to earlier, it would have to be done 60 days prior, at least 60 days prior to the election.
So my comment is just that as a 21-year resident and somebody that I operate a small business in town, so I have contact with a lot of residents, pretty active with social media too. So there's a lot of commenting about our loss of open space. You know, all the talk of the coyotes ending up in people's backyards, and they say, well, that's because we're taking away all of their habitat. I think there is a lot of interest in the town. A lot of people would like to see this happen, and I think that it did come up to a vote. I think it would stand a very good chance of passing, so I'd encourage the council to try to get that done.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this? Please come forward. A new person.
Oh. I was number three on that vote. Loretta Trahan, 1 Green Street. I came here tonight very thrilled with the presentation. Thank you, Jamie. And I've done some reading about it, and the first thing that came to my mind is, my God, we lost all that money. How did this happen? So obviously very much in favor of this. I think it's the best thing for our town right now. The only thing I'd like to comment on is we need to educate the public. Like with any other vote that's going to be coming down the road, people need to understand what's at stake and what we need to do to educate them. But I would hope the council would vote for this and get it on this next election. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Roberta. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to it? Please just name and address.
Hi, my name is Susan Spears. I live at 171 Lincoln Street. I've lived here now. My son is turning 32, so I've lived here for 32 years. We moved to Franklin because of a couple of things, principally the schools and the library. great assets that we still have that still bring people in. It's still why we stay here. Those of us who stay, that's why we stay. Great community to have lived in for this long. I'm now active with an environmental group that does affordable housing with the town and that does open space and that does environmental education. We're now 15 towns big. I can see when Larry and I hear about the projects that Mendon and Upton and other towns on that big map are able to do in their small towns with their capacity because they adopted CPA in the first wave, either first or second wave. They've had CPA now for 10 years. And I have to tell you, other people are thinking the same thing we are. I was around and involved in 2007, and my husband said, "Are you? Is that the time that I went out there and held a sign and nobody wanted to talk to us?" We have to have a lot of time, as you just mentioned, we have to have a lot of time to get the word out and to build a network. Steve knows all the nonprofits in town. There's a lot of talk going on that maybe we're going to get together, Ag Commission, that we just take time. So please don't wait until the last minute. If you like it, start the wheels in motion so the community has a chance to get behind it this time. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Mary Olson, 149 Westonville. I'm here as a representative from the Historic Commission, and we have been talking about this for quite a while. We're very excited that it is coming before the council. A couple of years ago, we had a gentleman from Canton who came to one of our meetings and told us what the CPA had done for Canton. He did note the amount of money that Franklin raises on an annual basis that we don't use, and he thanked us very much for that. He explained all of the, just for that year, I think they had four projects that were playgrounds and recreational. So to the Spears, Ms. Spears and Roberta's point, it's about educating the town. And this gentleman in Canton told us that we needed to go out and campaign as if it was a candidate on the ballot. And I think if we all got together, everybody who's interested, and we all worked together, and more people were holding signs, that we could get it done. So thank you for the consideration. Nice job.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this item? Well, I think I'll take the floor last. Certainly, this is something that, from what I've heard and what I've seen, it's something that the council, I believe, wants to move forward with. So I would ask the town administrator to begin the process. I know it does have to come back to us, obviously, at least once, and probably twice, to get this passed and on the ballot, but to everyone's point, sooner rather than later is probably the right thing. And having been involved in a few of these educational projects in the past, going out there and selling schools, senior centers, and so forth, libraries, so forth, I think the education piece is the biggest piece. And I would urge people that are out here tonight, the people that are listening, to get in touch with your counselors, get involved, help us to spread that word. And along the way, as we prepare to put it on the ballot, there'll be more of the presentation given here during council meetings, but that's not the biggest piece. The biggest piece is getting out there to the public. So whether there's informational sessions, whether they be held here or at the schools, certainly easily done, one of the items that was on one of your slides was a minimum of 5% of the votes required to do that. Obviously, coming up with a presidential election when you're going to get the majority, or the most people that you're going to get out to an election will be out in November. I think it's absolutely the right time to be doing this, and I would just ask the town administrator to begin the process to get this on November 1.
Yeah. And we obviously have town attorney over here who has been through this process, and I think he's a huge asset to the community to try to help us through that process and all the little legal hurdles that I'm sure we have to go through. So
it's awful nice having somebody that's been through it before. So
you will have to start thinking from a policy standpoint, the percentage and the exemptions, because that has to be in the legislation.
Understood. And again, that's why I'm saying, let's start the process now. It'll have to come before us two more times anyway before it gets voted to be put on the ballot. Councilor Plagrin, did you
have a... I think that perhaps, Mr. Chairman, it would be a good idea for you, probably by our next meeting even, to set up an ad hoc committee of the different people in the committees that are already existing, so that can begin working on this.
Absolutely, and that's a good point, and certainly that's what I was alluding to without saying it, was looking, as I see, a large audience out here, and hopefully many people watching at home. We need your involvement. We need your help. We need you to help educate the taxpayers of Franklin to understand why this is the right thing to do and why we should be voting yes on this ballot question when it does come up. Okay. Thank you.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.